Normally at this time we do our sharing of the peace, but I'd like to do something a little different today. We're gathered together today for a number of reasons, and all of us come here with varying degrees of and varying interpretations of what faith really means. Today, let it be known that when we sing about Jesus Christ, what we're really singing about as Christian people is that God decided somehow to embrace all the people of the world. Jesus rejected no one in his life. Jesus made sure everyone counted. It didn't matter whether they believed or they didn't. It didn't matter if they followed him or they didn't, if they had ever heard of him or didn't. His message was that everyone is loved by the God of all peoples. And his mission was to make that happen. And we as Christian people, it is now our mission to ensure that no one ever feels in any way rejected because of words or theologies. We need to come to a day, brothers and sisters, where we can stand together as Christians, believers, non-believers, atheists, Muslims, Buddhists, and all the rest, and allow everyone to believe whatever they believe, and yet to come together because we are human beings and who are responsible to each other, whatever our philosophy, whatever our means, whatever our education, whatever status of life we have. It is our job to ensure that no one is ever rejected. And so here we extend to you not just a welcome for this day, but for every day. And that is the wish of peace that we give to each other every Sunday morning as a reminder of who we really are supposed to be, what our call is, and how it is ours to live every day. And so may God's peace be with all of you. Our gospel reading this morning is from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 11. This is the second part of references to John the Baptist. Last week we heard how he was living out in the desert in the wilderness, and he was eating locusts and wild honey. And out in the desert he had some kind of an experience of God that led him to come out of the desert and proclaim through a new baptism, which was a ritual part of Judaism for many, many years. It wasn't called a baptism, but for centuries, being washed with water was a sign of purification in the presence of God. And also it is the central part of life on this planet, and they had a great appreciation of the power of water. And John the Baptist takes that washing of water and turns it into really a revolution. Because as we said last week, what he was doing was turning upside down everything that everyone had believed so far. Because simply coming out of a very paternalistic system, a system that was filled with violence and judgment and fear, a system that supported people with great wisdom because of the quality of the prophets, and yet because of the circumstances of their history and geography, the people of Judea and the people of Israel had really no peace and were always living under some kind of occupation. And so out of that spirit comes John the Baptist, who says, now this is what the world order has been, and this is what the world order is going to become. And when it comes time for him to respond, as he does this morning, he is pointing out to the person of Jesus, who is not the one that we believe in church, not the one you grew up believing in your catechism and all your CE programs. The Jesus we're talking about, the Jesus of the gospel, is somebody that challenges all of our doctrines and all of our dogmas, because unlike our dogmas that can be exclusive, unlike our doctrines that can be somewhat myopic, some of the statements that have been made from one Christian tradition to another denomination, even in Judaism and other religions, this Jesus is the one that we hold up as a model for all people, because like so many others who lived on this planet, he offered something revelatory about the experience of God, and it changed people's lives. So with that in mind, chapter 11. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" And Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is the one who takes no offense at me." As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to see? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look, those who wear soft robes are in royal palaces. What then did you go out to see? Prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet, for this is the one about whom it was written, 'See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' And truly, I tell you, among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist. And yet, the least in God's kingdom is greater than he." The Gospel of the Lord. John the Baptist was a very important figure, not only in Christianity, but I think in the place of the world. Because in the world, he stands as a person who has a personal encounter that changes his perspective on life. And as a result of that change, he is able to go forward and to touch other people's lives, not only by his words, by his actions, by the spirit that he evoked, and by the willingness of people to open themselves to him. Now, we expect somebody like that in the Bible. Do we ever expect anybody like that in our own lives? It's nice to look at someone like John the Baptist and pour all kind of accolades on him because he was a different kind of person. But as we suggested last Sunday, one of the things that we are more aware of today than ever before in our world is that there's a great distrust of institutions. Just this week, how many people were killed because they were police? How many people really trust any government? You look around the globe, there is all kind of turmoil going on in the political world, in the religious world, in all the worlds in which we live. And because the globe is so much smaller than it ever was, everything that affects one group does indeed affect the rest. It is no longer safe to say that we are all fine here, so we don't care what happens over there. We know economically that is not true. We know ecologically that is not true. We know globally, unless we begin to work together and come together as people, we are relegated to lives that are run by people who hold the power. And in some places, that may be a good thing because maybe we agree with them. But there are many places where the people don't agree with the power and where the powers are not open to equality and to justice and to equanimity in the society, to personal freedoms, to religious freedom, the possibility of working with dignity, the possibility of a future that just may offer hope to the next generation. All that being said, what does that have to do with us? I suggested last week that as a people, you and I must learn to speak a new way of loving each other. The religious ways don't work anymore. There's great distrust of denominational churches across the board. All churches, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish synagogues, evangelicals are all on the wane, and we have a rising tide of young people who don't trust it and who have no use for it. I don't think we need to reinvent the church. I think the problem has been all along the very same problem that we find in the Gospels, the very same problem we find in the Hebrew Scriptures, the very same problem you will find in any part of world history. Generations and generations and generations of people who never learned how to care about each other. We are in a place right now in our world where the challenge is real and the challenge is great. But I was thinking, you know, this is Christmas time. And one of the things that comes out of our closet every Christmas time is a copy of the 1951 version of the Christmas Carol. Now, up until the time I was married, I hated Christmas. I hated it because as a priest, you spend your whole month in church. I mean, that's what a priest is supposed to do, you know, spend your month in church. But doing things that take away any joy. By the time Christmas came, the last thing I wanted to do after the last Mass was drive across the state and have dinner with my family. I wanted to go to bed. Christmas is very special for a number of reasons, but I bring it up because A Christmas Carol, after I got married 27 years ago, 26 years this year, my wife loves Christmas. She lives for Christmas. In fact, her allergies are worse at Christmas because we have decorations all over the place. She would die rather than not put up Christmas decorations. I'd rather kill myself than fight her doing that. But every year we watch The Christmas Carol. And I'm a person who spent most of my life being very reflective about myself. I had nobody else to think about but myself and the people I cared for. But spending a lot of time alone, you reflect a lot. And I have always been one who looks at myself and says, what could I have done differently or better? And I can tell you that growing up as a Catholic boy, I was riddled with guilt every day of my life because I know I didn't do it right. And every Saturday we went to church and went to confession and I pleaded out my cause. And every week I'd go back and say the very same thing because nothing changed. One of the great heroes of my life has become Scrooge. I always saw Scrooge as this mean old, you know, financially godlike person who cared little about anything else except his wallet. And that certainly comes through in the movie. But what I'll enjoy about Scrooge is, even though it may be fantasy, I see him as a man that came home from work one night and sat there in front of the fire freezing because he was too cheap to pay for coal to put on the fire, eating a bowl of tepid soup and suddenly having an awareness that something was not right. And so suddenly he's aware that maybe in the past, I could have done something different. And you know the story about the visit of the three ghosts, the three spirits, etc. What happens in that movie is what happens to us in our lives if we reflect for a moment. I now speak to anyone who has ever been hurt by somebody else in your life. I know I have, and I know I've hurt people. We look at our lives, and if we do, wouldn't it be true that someone was hurting because of some judgment we made about them? Scrooge goes back to his youth and his relationship with his sister. And then he finds himself reflecting on his relationship with the woman he loved, and his inability to do anything about it because money was more important. And then he listens to his comrades in arms, the people he spent his life dealing money with and working with and taking advantage of in order to get ahead. And he has some sadness about that. And then he's brought to a place to look at what's going on in his life right now. And there's a family with great need, poor people, whose son happens to have a disease. And he looks to see that that family cannot possibly have any joy, but what he finds is when he considers their lives, they have a lot of joy in spite of all the tragedies. And then he goes to the future. And what about the future? What's going to happen to little tiny Tim? What's going to happen to all these people? What's going to happen when I die? And it's not until he realizes that when all is said and done, if he were to die that day, they would rejoice and have a great celebration dinner for him in his honor because he was such a pain throughout his whole life. Not one friend. When I reflect on my life, I know that I've been in a position many times to do some good and certainly got up every day wanting to do exactly that. But I also know that there were people in my life that I judged from what someone told me before I met them or something that they did that I thought their behavior was not acceptable. The people that I thought were kind of shallow and people whose lives I never really explored but had them in a category where I could deal with them and be comfortable with whatever was going on between us. That's not love. That's not even close. In the old truism, until you walk a mile in someone's shoes, you don't really know. And I don't know about you, but I've known probably millions of people in my life, and there are very, very few who ever open up and tell you what really is going on deep down inside. And so we are left with a judgment on the external, with a position that somehow puts us in a better place than they because we are better, or that categorizes people. And we relegate them to that category file in our heads. I don't think that I'm any different from anybody else in the world. I don't think Scrooge was anything more than an everyman, if you will. The first part of learning a new language of love is learning how to understand ourselves honestly. The hardest part about making any kind of progress in personal growth is confronting our own egos. Egos are wonderful things, they help us be who we are. But when they dominate, when my ego is more important than anything else, then I know there has to be a hell because those people got to go someplace. There has to be retribution, not forgiveness. There's got to be retribution because you did this to me, I'm going to do that to you. Because you behave this way, I'll behave that way too. And brothers and sisters, that doesn't work. It's worked to make a very divided humanity in every culture. It's a human thing. John the Baptist here is talking about not just the human, but also the eternal and the divine. Whether you believe in God or not, there's a part of every one of us that wants to be loved. There's a part of every one of us that wants to be respected by everybody who looks at us. There's a part of every one of us that finds some kind of delight in knowing that somebody looks at me and says, wow, is he good? Or is she a wonderful person? What a caring, kind person. There's something in every one of us that wants somehow to walk around this earth totally free to be ourselves and know that the world around me is going to respect it. I wish that for everybody, including myself, but I do know, and I say this in all humility, I know that I have a lot of work to do, that there's an awful lot of ego in my life. And I stand before you today to remind all of us that if indeed the hymns we sing about the joy and the peace of Christmas and all the wonderful feelings and hope for the coming year, etc., have any foundation, I know it has to begin here with me. We can't fix the world. We can't fix most of the problems in the world. But we can fix whatever it is that keeps us from accepting love from other people and being loving in return. In fact, being loving even if nothing comes back from the other person. That is what Jesus was about. That is what every religious leader, whoever founded a religion, was all about. And that is what most of us religious people have lost sight of. Now is the acceptable time, says the scripture. And I do believe now is our time. Because unless we take that time, we don't hold out much hope for the future generations. Not the way things are going today. So on this Sunday in Advent, let us open ourselves, please, to trusting in the grace of God, or the blessing of the earth, or the power of the universe, whatever you want to call it, and trust that somehow we may be touched in a way that we will become the change. We will become the Jesus of the moment, that indeed he will be born again, because we ourselves are born anew. It's just a thought. Amen.